This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
Each of these media creates a new environment. It creates a new situation for human association and human perception. Any medium at all creates a new pattern, a new atmosphere, a new environment of human perception, which works upon the whole man. It works upon the whole society. That is the effect of a medium. It has that total pervasive effect. That is the message, that social change that is brought about. The content of the medium is never the message, because the content is always the old medium.
From the vast wilds of the Great White North for the week of November the 3rd, 2014, it's TVA, a Canadian perspective on television from north and south of the 49th parallel. I'm Anthony Marco.
And I'm Diane Wild.
And I'm Greg David.
And we would like you to put your television on mute for episode 169 of TVA, the podcast. We have rolled into November, and it's getting colder outside, and I'm assuming it's probably raining out in Vancouver, Diane.
It is indeed. It's raining a lot in Vancouver. Today. I mean, it was a nice weekend, but not so much today.
When things fall, they fall wet in Vancouver. I don't know what that means.
Do you guys have snow out there?
No, actually, you know what? Today was quite nice, right, Greg?
It was quite nice.
It was pleasant.
We had kind of a little bit of snow that fell on the weekend.
Yeah, we had flurries one of the mornings. I remember waking up, looking outside and seeing flurries and then saying, yeah, I'm going back to bed.
All my reports come from Twitter or my mother.
I knew because my cat decided he started to head outside and then turned right around and came back in again. He was not interested in going out. It's like, yeah, winter's on its way.
It's like, oh yeah, going outside. Oh no.
No, I'm not.
So we got a bunch to talk about. Now, when I say a bunch, not like we have tons of links, but we just tend to talk a lot. Because once every 2 weeks, it's not like it used to be once every week. You know, we sometimes exhaust ourselves from talking, but you know, after a while, every 2 weeks, we tend to talk a lot. That's just the way it is.
We do. We tend to talk a lot anyway.
Yeah, I think that's our nature. Before I forget, please, if you wish, go to visit our Twitter account. Notice how I emphasize the Twitter. The Twitter account at TV_EH, if you wish to get in touch with us. Go to our subreddit to contribute links to our show, which is going to happen in 2 weeks. You can vote links up or vote links down there. It's TVEH.reddit.com. It's called a subreddit, and if you're on Reddit, you know all about it. Maybe you go there for the Ask Me Anythings for your favorite celebrity stars or musicians or politicians. And you go hang out there and look at all the stuff there. Well, you can go to TVEH.reddit.com and contribute links. We did have a link contributed this week by Jim Henshaw. So there you go.
There you go.
See? And we're going to be talking about it. See, that's how easy it is, folks. That's how easy it is. Before we get into the links this week, it's time for the... It's a very crucial time. I have a feeling that that Diane's going to win again this week. But it's time for the beverage update.
I didn't even know it was a competition.
Well,
I would have been trying way harder.
I don't think it really is.
To be fair,
I feel like I have something to live up to.
It's an exhibition, not a competition. Please, no wagering.
No wagering. Letterman. Yeah, the whole thing started because, I mean, we didn't deliberately set out to do a beverage update. It just became my ridiculous amounts of drinks that caused it. So I feel like I have something to live up to, which is.
But the title, My Ridiculous Amount of Drinks, was better served for a memoir that she's going to write one day.
Yes, the sad story of a woman who always has three beverages on at the same time. So
it's always, there's the alcoholic one, there's the tea one, and there's the fizzy one, right?
See, there you go. You know the pattern, but I've broken it today, which is very sad. But it's because I have a fizzy one, a tea one, but no alcoholic one because I need to go drive somewhere after this. So I decided not to. Also, I would have had to crack open a fresh bottle of wine, and I don't. Like, I'm only here for another day, so it seemed like a waste.
She makes it sound like it was going to last longer than a day. Isn't that sweet?
I know.
Hey, gotta have my secrets. So, sorry, I guess I should say what I have. Oh, no, do I remember what I have?
Apparently that wine got started early.
The tea is a cranberry cream rooibos. From which is imported from Edmonton, because I was there last weekend, and there was a tea store that had
well it, so done
brought it back. And then my fizzy drink is, it's unusual for me because I usually just have fizzy water. This one is actually, it's got like sweetener in it, and it's, what is it, it's like lemon balm lavender or something. It's really strange, and it tastes slightly strange but good. Okay. Strange but good.
Is it legal to cross provincial lines with rooibos?
Well, I don't know, because you don't pay the PST in Alberta, so maybe not.
I know down in some U.S. states, if you try and cross state lines with fruit, they don't like it.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. I remember crossing from Arizona into California once, and they asked what fruit we were bringing in.
Mm. Well, they have all kinds of like diseases and stuff that they try and stop.
Yeah.
I don't think my rooibos has a disease.
I don't think so. It's new. What, Ebola rooibos? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe. Go with the theme.
Exactly.
What do you guys have?
Greg, go ahead.
I'm boring. I'm having water, tap water that's gone through the Brita filter. But to augment that, I have roasted pumpkin seeds and the leftovers of the Halloween candy. We didn't have very many kids this year. So I've got mini Mars, mini Snickers, and Tootsie Rolls.
I don't know if it's legal to enhance your beverage pick by adding additional things onto it.
Well,
I actually meant to add that I have a bowl of raspberries, which are very good.
Now, were you to drop some of those pumpkin seeds into the water?
Ooh.
Well, I think I'll just put the Tootsie Roll in there.
There you go.
Just float it in there. As an homage to Caddyshack.
It's called the floater.
Not a good visual.
What about you, Anthony? What do you got?
Everything's pumpkin spice these days, right?
That is true.
Yeah, there you go. Just throw some nutmeg in there and whatever. I'm on episode 2 of my my special Tops Friendly Markets purchase of I forget what they were called exactly off the top of my head, though. But this is I did not mix these two together. It comes pre-mixed like this. It is half lemonade, half iced tea.
Okay, that actually sounds good. That's normal.
That's the Arnold Palmer, isn't it?
Isn't there like alcohol in the Arnold Palmer?
No, it's that iced tea that you can get in the huge cans, and there's one called the Arnold Palmer. It's kind of like the pumpkin spice now. It's everybody's doing their version of the half lemonade, half iced tea thing.
So I guess people might mix up which half, what kind of iced tea it might be. So this is just straightforward half iced tea and straightforward half lemonade, mixed with powder straight from the artisanal fonts of Hamilton. Hey, we've got some clean drinking water in Hamilton.
You have to chew your water. That was always the story when I was living in Brantford.
No, maybe you in Brantford had to chew your water, but in Hamilton, we got some good water. I can't drink water anywhere else. It tastes weird.
It tastes weird because it's...
He's used to the iron flex in his water.
Oh, we got good water here. Other water just tastes weird. I travel all over the place and I try the water. It's like, I can't drink this water. It's weird.
Wow, that's an exciting thing to travel the world to taste.
I'm a water connoisseur. I'm going to write a book on international waters of the world. That's kind of redundant, isn't it? Anyway, time to get started. And it's time to show me the money. From the Rogers Communications press release, strangely enough, when you hear this headline, you won't be shocked that it's from their press release.
All right.
Rogers offers another great service, ShowMe, now available to internet and cable customers. So as a Rogers customer starting, I think, tomorrow or today?
Yes. Yeah, tomorrow.
Tomorrow, I can try 30 free days of Rogers ShowMe.
Yeah, and if you're a Shaw customer, you get the same thing. They made the joint announcement today, and they flew in Orlando Jones from Sleepy Hollow, and they flew in Kim Coates from Sons of Anarchy just to make the whole thing official. So, for eight, we get it for free for a month.
Sorry, I didn't know.
Go ahead.
I didn't know that they were the official.
They're the official.
They made things official.
Yeah.
Orlando Jones and Kim Coates, now you're good to go.
Yeah.
It does seem very random, doesn't it?
It's totally random. It's totally random.
We brought in Kim Fields from The Facts of Life.
I would go to see that.
I would too, actually. Yeah, and then if you're, I think this is the same case is if you're a Shaw customer, if you've got one of the high-speed internet, you get it through till the end of March because Rogers gets that as well. So the big launch is tomorrow, and yeah, I'm actually very interested in how this will work, and thank goodness I get the month, at least a month for free because I wasn't going to pay the $8.99 for it. So I want to check out the streaming. I want to check out the content because, of course, all we know right now is all the American content. So I'm dying to know if there's any Canadian content that'll be on there as of tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the, now I'm on Rogers as well, so I'm going to be able to try it out for the month. So I do want to see what kind of content they have on it as well. It seems now, remember when they first announced this about a month ago, it was we're all about quality over quantity of programming.
Right.
In other words, we're not going to have a lot to start off.
We have two shows, but they're really good. And they start Orlando Jones and Kim Coates.
Well, they were really pimping that Modern Family, I think, when they first announced it. So, I mean, they probably have the rights to that, at least for the past seasons anyway.
Yeah, they were making it. There was a party tonight down in the Distillery District, and I was checking out some of their tweets, and Modern Family was front and center as well for that. So those are three shows. Three shows we know of for sure out of the 12,000 hours of content in the first year combining binge-worthy TV series and Hollywood hits.
They don't say 12,000 hours at one time.
That's right.
Like, maybe it's one show every, like, 2 hours or something.
Yeah, I got into this interesting conversation with some people on Twitter yesterday or the day before because they keep putting out these releases for Show Me saying that they have this exclusive content, and they keep repeating and listing off shows that I've already seen on Netflix. So I don't know whether it's a case of just that the license has expired for Netflix and that's why they're going over to Show Me, but they keep making it sound like it's an exclusive when I've seen a bunch of these shows already because they're already on Netflix. So that's another thing that I kind of, maybe they're saying exclusive to Canada because this is Canadian because it's Show Me. I'm not quite sure how that works.
Technically, if they've expired on Netflix, then they are exclusive.
Well, yeah, and that's what I'm wondering. But then that's kind of gray area if you're saying exclusive because it's not actually exclusive to Canada. It's exclusive to Show Me.
It's a weaselly way to put it, because if it's already been on Netflix, I mean, I guess it's now exclusive, but it's kind of like every entertainment headline that says exclusive when it's, you know, the same interview that everybody else got with that actor.
And believe me, I get on people about that when they say exclusive. It's like, it's not exclusive if every other outlet gets it.
That's by definition not it.
It does say, yeah. So I'm under the Show Me What Can I Watch page right now. Mm-hmm. And by the way, it's an entertainment lover's paradise. I just want to let you know that. Yes. Simply put, it is. They've got the exclusive stuff you want that you just won't find on any other streaming service. It's exclusive stuff. Not necessarily stuff. Television content. No. Stuff.
Lots of stuff.
Yes. They will offer the most current binge-worthy TV series from around the world. Around the world, mind you. Including America and maybe Canada.
Did they actually list anything?
They list Modern Family, Sleepy Hollow, Two Broke Girls, Shameless, Vikings, and American Horror Story.
Vikings is a co-pro.
Yeah.
Technically.
And they say with 11,000 hours of past seasons of hit TV shows, you will always find something great to watch. Now, 11,000 hours, I could fill 11,000 hours with public domain stuff from the 50s. So, I mean... I'm serious. Like, I mean, hours aren't enough.
It doesn't actually mean anything. Like, people can't translate that. Like, I've been watching Gilmore Girls because I actually didn't watch it when it was first run, and I could not tell you how many hours are in that show.
Yeah,
you know, it's not the way people think of content.
Well, and like, you can go on Crackle for free, and I can like watch 5 seasons of Good Times. And like Sanford and Son. I'm serious. I'd rather watch that than some of these other shows.
But Modern Family probably has more of a draw than Sanford and Son.
What, to some people? I'm just saying. I'd rather watch Good Times, to be honest with you.
I would too.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay. Everyone go to Crackle for free.
But they've got exclusive stuff anyway. So
it's funny because I have been fairly negative about Shomi, and then now Bell has announced their Project Latte, which I don't think we put a link in there for that. But anyway, they've announced Project Latte. That's their code name. They're going to reveal to us what the real name is later, but by that time, everybody will have started calling it Project Latte.
I have a feeling that's the original name. And then when they started getting heat for it, they said, no, that's just the project name. That's a space filler.
Yeah. They called it a code in the media release. But I mean, I'm fairly negative about it because I don't really care about services that are tied to a specific provider. The Bell version isn't going to be tied to like Rogers is tied to, Shomi is tied to Rogers and Shaw. The Bell one will be available to other cable providers. Now, you know, I'm going to guess that Rogers and Shaw aren't going to carry it, but other, you know, TELUS might, you know, whatever. All these individual cable companies might. But I don't have much interest in the ones that are tied to a subscription because to me it's no different from, I don't know, it's just not that exciting to me. I mean, Netflix, you aren't tied to anything, whereas these ones, it just feels like you should be able to get past seasons of a show if you're a subscriber. It doesn't seem interesting.
Yeah, it also says your favorite movies, and I haven't seen a movie listed.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you don't have any favorite movies.
Yeah.
That's true. I'd rather watch Sanford and Son, that's why. But, so... Yeah,
they have announced some partnerships with like Sony and Warner Brothers, so I'm assuming that movies under there, those banners. But you're right, they haven't listed any of them.
It sounds like we're being tough on it. Admittedly, you're right.
But I didn't finish my thought, which is that I hope they succeed because it would be nice. But I just think that now the market is too fragmented. Like they're not all going to succeed, and I don't think it's Netflix that's going to die.
Well, that's it. What do you have that moves me from Netflix? And I can't see anything that moves. I can't see a game changer here that moves me from Netflix.
Bell with HBO might be the one.
But HBO has already said that, you know, down in the States anyway, they're going to do their own thing next year. I don't know how far away they are from doing that in Canada. But to me, unless I've locked that up for 5 or 10 years, if I was Bell, I would be pretty worried that it's not going to last too long. Because if HBO finds success in the States with it, who knows? They might try something similar up here.
But then the CRTC would come swooping in.
But they can't. It's the internet.
Well, that's what they're debating right now. Yeah, exactly. Yes, they are. Tend to do.
It's the internet.
They're debating right now whether they're going to try and, you know, regulate.
And see, I still can't get past the name Show Me. It's the silly spelling and...
It's better than Project Latte.
I'm surprised they don't have the long O dash over top of the O.
I know. I was thinking the same thing. There's some umlauts somewhere. Yeah. It's begging for umlauts.
I hate the lowercase. I actually just refuse to spell it that way.
Oh, yeah.
It's like something you'd name a killer whale at SeaWorld or something like that. You know? Look, it's Show Me the Killer Whale.
Is that Shamu's cousin?
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, if you're interested, take that free month. That's all I can say. If you're on Rogers, if you're on Shaw, take advantage of that free month, take a look at it and watch some of those shows to your heart's content and do all of your binge worthy show watching. And then maybe at the end of it, you'll decide whether you want it or not. Or maybe you'll decide, I really just watched everything that I would want to watch on Show Me.
And you can choose to give another $8.99 to your already inflated cable bill.
Well, that's another thing, too. So I'm curious about the net neutrality implications here. If you stream a ridiculous amount of Show Me shows and you happen to be a Rogers customer, is it going to count against you the same way that it would count streaming something else?
Yeah, what do they do with the hockey? The hockey counts against it, doesn't it?
I have no idea.
I think it does. I think that the streaming of the hockey, because I remember them sending me an email warning me, okay, if you're going to be streaming it on a device, it's going to use up about this much of your package. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have it here. It doesn't say it in the release, but it's got to count against it. That could get pricey.
Oh, yeah. You're right. And like, especially if people start trying to think that they're going to do it over 4G or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, also, starting in 2015... there's going to be a 24-hour TV channel in Canada called Vice Media. So I have no idea about this. It's Vice Media and Rogers Communications. There's Rogers again. Let the silos ever grow. Are going to launch a production studio and TV channel aimed at millennials. Oh, yay.
But you know, Vice is quite successful, and they actually have a, you know, sort of a point of view. So this is another interesting partnership for Rogers. Like, forget about Show Me, which I'm not that excited about, but they were the ones who had the partnership with Netflix to co-produce a show, a Canadian show. And now they're partnering with Vice to, and it's going to be a studio as well. So they're going to produce content for television, mobile devices, etc. So this is really interesting to me. And I just think Rogers right now is doing some of the most interesting ways to create content than anyone else. Everyone else is, you know, the same old, and Rogers seems to be looking to, you know, how can we get financing to produce content that we own, which I think is a really smart thing to do. Like I it goes against every fiber of my being to praise somebody like this, but I really think they're doing interesting things.
Yeah, and the other thing that they made a point of announcing is the fact that they want to foster Canadian talent from, you know, reporters, on-air talent, producers, writers, editors, and things like that. So they want it to be, Shane wants it to be, you know, not only a business, but kind of a learning, with a learning experience for people. And I think that that's a good thing. I mean, that gets me excited from that standpoint that we're going to have a studio here where kids, those millennials, can go and even learn about, or maybe teach us old folks a few things when it comes to, you know, making things and setting things up for this Vice station. This is more of a, I am excited about the Vice channel because I do, I admit, I do watch a Vice, the stuff that they put on the movie network, I think it is where I watch it, and certainly the viral stuff. So I'm interested in this, and you know, this guy Shane, he's this pretty smart dude, and I haven't seen a lot of things that he's done fail, so. I think this is good.
To
But as
me,
John Doyle does point out, though, that it's going to cost us because we're probably going to have to pay for this channel, getting back to things that we have to pay for.
exactly,
Yeah.
and you know, so it's gonna cost you. But beyond that, just speaking about the content, how niche is this channel? Like, if it's targeted towards millennials, I mean, I kind of cringe when I hear that because I think.
And I think that's more like, I think that's an old person's way to describe the fact that they aren't just focusing on a 22-minute comedy or, you know, whatever it is, 40-something minute drama, that they're also producing stuff that is specifically for mobile, tablet, you know, that kind of thing. So my assumption is that it's almost like they'll have room for kind of web series type things, not just a full thing. So that's my assumption. And, you know, they're going to do other things. They're doing, it sounds like they're doing some scripted stuff as well as news and that kind of thing. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, to me, the millennial thing, you know, if it gets to.
It could possibly be, is it possible that the millennial thing is about some of the parameters and the tropes that they might be dealing with as opposed to the content itself? In other words, might they be creating a bunch of 10-minute series that they can play on the web as well as play on
That's what
TV.
I'm trying to say, yeah. And I mean, I'm sure the content is supposed to skew younger too, but you know, so is a lot of content that we watch too, you know. So I'm not judging it yet. I mean,
Oh,
I
go
think
ahead.
it's,
Yeah,
yeah,
go
well, we'll
ahead.
see. But I am actually interested in this. You know, I think, like I said, I think it shows what's his name, Guy Lawrence, or is he French? It might be Guy Lawrence, is the newish head of Rogers, and he seems to be kind of spearheading some of this interesting stuff, which I can't wait to see what they come up with.
I just, is it just me, or do we find it ironic that the press conference it looks like they had with pictures are essentially, you know, admittedly two guys who under, but I mean, they're talking about millennials and they're two guys who are both older than any of us.
But that's what I mean. Like, I mean, everyone's chasing these eyeballs, but you know, I'm not sure how much that counts. But you know, I can see someone like, you know, Dan Spearon of Truth Mashup. Like, he's probably thinking of how he can pitch to this already.
Sure.
I see it as being that kind of opening for creators in Canada, the sort of the younger ones, who people who are doing the comedy coup on CBC, for example. I mean, they should have their little antenna up for this, I think. You know, I think it's an exciting thing. I don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but I'm not going to poo-poo this anytime soon until they call it Project Latte or something.
The thing that bothers me about this, and I know it's going to sound like traditional anth here. I hate that Rogers has to be in on this. I appreciate that they are, don't get me wrong. Like if it couldn't happen without them, I get it. But I hate that they have to be part of it. Like, wouldn't it be nice if Vice could just say, hey, we're doing this?
Yeah, but it sounds like they want traditional channels in the mix, too.
But that's what I mean. They're completely blocked out of that. They have to partner with Rogers because there's no other way to get on the dial.
Yeah, right, okay. Right. I see that. I mean, we'll talk a bit later about how indie is indie in television. But yeah, I mean, that's true, though.
They'll take one of the Omni channels.
Well, yeah, who knows what they're going to take. There is I don't think they're going to take one of the Omni channels. I think the Omni 1 and Omni 2 do incredibly well in Toronto because of the multicultural programming.
Yeah, I was just kidding. Speaking of them, though, Omni 2 the other night, where they were showing Hockey Night in Canada, and they had Punjabi play-by-play. Yes. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think Omni 1 and 2...
That would go over really big here.
I think Omni 1 and 2 do amazing ratings, and they're very rarely talked about.
I don't see much on them, to tell the truth.
Yeah. I mean, they'll play on a Saturday and Sunday. They will do, like, half-hour and hour-long blocks of multicultural programming that probably gets almost every single eyeball from that group.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I still can't get over that, you know, a few years ago, Rogers was saying they couldn't afford to do Canadian content. They canceled Murdoch Mysteries. They only ever had like one scripted series on in a year, basically. And now they've become the network. I mean, we'll see how it all shakes out, but they've become the network who seems to be seeking out opportunities to do interesting content that they own.
Yeah, that was my thinking too. They've gone from 0 to 100 in like one press release.
Yeah, and I mean, it is, you know, maybe some skepticism is warranted in terms of will they actually come up with a bunch of shows, or is it just going to be a bunch of stuff that will, you know, be pushed onto digital platforms or whatever. But, you know, they need the shows, so I can't imagine that they wouldn't.
There are no channels left for them to buy. They've bought everything.
But Rogers is the baby. I mean, City is the baby network anyway. They don't have quite the reach the other ones do.
Rogers has bought everything.
Just hockey.
No. They own most of the television stations. The silos, I tell you, Diane.
I know. I'm just saying.
Speaking of Rogers and Murdoch Mysteries, a couple seasons later, and Murdoch Mysteries is still going, and Greg, it's celebrating its 100th episode.
Yeah, Monday night, after 8 seasons of people waiting, Dr. Julia Ogden and Detective William Murdoch finally tied the knot. I had a chance to talk to Paul Aitken, who was the writer of the episode, and he told me that it was a landmark 100th episode, of course. And they had originally planned, this kind of happened organically, they had originally planned to have an Origins episode of Murdoch that they were going to intersperse with the wedding, and things didn't turn out. So we still have the Origin episode to go. But they kind of threw a little bit of a fake out at the audience and the fans, because they had William and Julia finally go up to the altar, and they were about to say their vows when they realized that in the murder investigation that they had been working on, the wrong person had been put in jail, and so it looked as though they were going to forego their vows in order to catch this killer. And they were stopped by their boss, Inspector Brackenreed, in order to go back to the altar and finish their vow. So it was a nice little... So they did actually get married.
That's good, because I think fans would have just felt completely jerked around if they had...
I had asked him that. I said, you know, were you guys... Was there any chance that you guys weren't going to have them get married this season? And he said no. They had run out of reasons to keep them apart, and he didn't really think that it was fair for them to do that. It was great. The CBC, they had a big event on Monday night for the fans, and they had everybody on the panel there, along with the showrunners and people from Shaftesbury. So it was a big love-in down there at the CBC tonight. And, you know, landmark episode. I mean, 100 episodes of any show here in Canada is a big deal, so good for them.
That's huge, really. I mean, I said this at the time when it got sort of saved by CBC, but that's one of the biggest success stories in Canadian TV that I can think of in recent times.
Well, it comes on the heels of Heartland's record breaker just 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, Heartland is another one, but Murdoch just has the rising from the dead aspect to it, which is hard to beat.
Yeah.
But yeah, Heartland is definitely a survivor.
So if you're a Murdoch fan, you've already watched it. I mean, we're talking about it after the fact, but if you're not a Murdoch fan, now you know that you have 100 episodes that are binge-worthy. They're binge-worthy.
And Greg just spoiled the episode for you. Just spoiler warning.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
Now you know you'll have to wait 100 episodes for that knot to be tied.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can just imagine the fans kind of...
Okay, well, now hang on.
Already.
Or did they get married?
Did they? It was all a dream.
Yeah. It was his evil twin.
Diane.
Yes.
I seem to remember about a year ago during the first incarnation of this podcast that we were talking about a festival that was happening in Toronto that was coming up very soon and we knew nothing about.
I seem to remember that.
Apparently it's returning and we still know nothing.
We know a little.
We know it happened before. We know it's happening again.
We know it's coming. We know some of the shows that will be there. We don't know in, you know, this festival that starts in 10 days when things are happening, or how to get tickets. But that's minor details.
CITF, the Canadian International Television Festival, which sounds like an oxymoron when you call it the Canadian International Television Festival.
No, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, especially because, I mean, it's not very international, really.
Well, maybe it's because of the co-pros. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess.
So if you go to the website CITF14.tv, which sounds like a channel 14 somewhere in like Gananoque or something like that. It's like, tune in to CITF14.tv. They had this last year, and if you remember, when we were talking about it at the time, people would go, and in movie theaters across Toronto, people would watch television shows, which, as a concept, I don't mind. In fact, I quite liked the idea that did they do an Orphan Black marathon, I think? I think they might have done an Orphan Black or Lost Girl marathon.
Yeah, I can't remember. We got so little publicity for it, it was hard to keep track. They did do some marathon. I think they had a Murdoch panel that sold out quite quickly. And sold out, the tickets were free. Bell had sponsored the tickets, which is great.
Right.
I'm just reading, additional information will be announced on Tuesday, November 4th, because why give more than 10 days notice?
Exactly. Same day as Show Me launches. They wanted to piggyback on
something.
Synergy, it's
synergy.
Yeah.
Now, Greg, it's not like we don't know anything about this. There's some stuff in the press release.
Yeah, so there's...
Greg has some secret information, too.
Ooh.
I do? What's the secret? What I'm doing?
Oh, come on. Yes! You really are bad at promoting yourself.
I really am bad at promoting myself. Well, yes, I do know that I am going to be moderating a panel on Saturday, November the 22nd at 7 p.m. I'm assuming down at the Bell Lightbox movie theaters, where I'll be moderating a panel for Camp X. So we'll have Mark Ellis and Stephanie Morgenstern, the co-creators of that show, along with a couple of the stars, which are still being figured out, and some people from the producing side as well. So I'm looking forward to that. It should be very interesting. I always like to moderate these panels because I end up learning a lot about television and the struggles behind the scenes. But we do know a few things, although we don't actually have the dates of some of these.
We
don't know when. So we know that there's going to be marathon screenings of Unité Neuf. That's the, I think it's a cop show in Quebec, or it's a prison show. Unit 9. It sounds like it's police. History, season 1 of Vikings. Kind of odd considering they're heading into, I think it's season 4 of Vikings, which is what they're in production right now.
I don't think they've shown season 3 yet, have they?
Yes.
Oh, have they?
I've seen season 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're in production on season 4. Or is it that I've seen season... season 4 is coming up. Corner Gas cast reunion and preview of Corner Gas the movie, so it won't be the whole movie. The second episode of Blackstone, I know that because I spoke to Ron Eastcott last week, so they had just announced that. And, Diane, your friend, Lori, Finstad.
Yeah.
Kniznik? Is that how you pronounce her last name?
I have no idea, and I didn't ask her. I have been brutalizing her name for years, which makes me feel bad. I always call her Lori Finstad. I can't pronounce her name.
Oh! So she'll be there. And then Bill Brieu. Bill Brieu, who always, he's a television critic, longtime television critic. He was a TV guide, and now he works for The Star and Canadian Press. He's a freelancer. He always, he collects these old TV shows on, like, the original reel-to-reel films. And so I've been to a few events where he's actually shown the stuff. So he's going to be Lorne Michaels and Hart Pomerantz's The Hart and Lorne Terrific Hour. So that was Lorne Michaels' variety show, skit show that he did before he went off and did Saturday Night Live.
Right.
So that should be pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. Anything. Now, if he had celebrity cooks, that would be a totally different issue.
Bruno's not around, right?
No, exactly. It looks like there's going to be a bunch of seminars and panels, which they don't quite list in their fullest capability. That's the thing that bothered us last year, is that it's less than 2 weeks away. It's 10 days long. The tickets are free, but we don't know what they're tickets to.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, apparently this week people will be able to get them, but it does seem strange in terms of promotion. I think they rely on the fact that it's because the tickets are free, they don't need as much promotion. I got the impression last year that there was just a scramble behind the scenes to get things ready because they kept missing the deadlines that they were saying. And I can't imagine why they thought, given how poorly it seemed to be organized last year, why they should expand it this year, but good for them. So hopefully it turns out well. I know that last year they had some sellouts. I didn't actually hear much in terms of the overall reception for the festival. I didn't really, you know, get a sense of anything other than the major fan screenings. But I think they might have some for industry as well. I can't quite remember, but I thought they had some industry panels too.
Yeah, they did. They did. Yeah. I can't remember off the top of what they were, but or what the attendance was for them.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a great idea. I wish it felt like it was better organized.
That's the thing. Like, if you're going, I mean, one of the big things that they're going to do is they're going to have the exclusive North American premiere of the miniseries, The Book of Negroes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, so that's going to be, that's probably going to
be. That should be big.
Yeah. That's going to be big. Now, but when you're having a festival, the entire purpose of a festival is to celebrate something. And if you don't know what you're celebrating or when you're celebrating, it's like if I said, I want you to come to my house for a birthday this weekend. And you said, well, whose birthday is it? And I said, I'm not telling you. That kind of freezes you in your tracks and you don't know what to do at that point. It's like you might not know the person whose birthday it is. And then why are you coming at that point?
I keep thinking of things like, you know, trying to get together for dinner with this small group of friends, and we have to plan like 2 months in advance to get a date where we can all go for dinner. Yeah. So I think, you know, I mean, this kind of thing, you can probably find time if it's something you're really excited about, but it just seems odd that you can't plan more than 2 weeks in advance. Like I think of the Paley Festival, which this is most similar to the Paley Festival, I think, in Los Angeles. And I've been to that. And I mean, tickets go on sale months before the event. And yeah, in some ways you reduce the excitement of the event if people can't really hang their hat on, oh my God, I want to see this Corner Gas cast reunion and a preview of the movie. And when is it? No idea. And I can't keep the entire 10 days blocked off, you know, on the off chance that that's going to be when it will appear.
When somebody holds a comic book convention, they let you know many months in advance who's going to be there.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty tough as a writer, you know, like a new, you know, it's pretty hard to promote when you just don't have anything, right? Like, you know, you want to play this up. I want to talk about it, but there's nothing to talk about at this point. Yeah. Like it's, yeah.
I mean, it's very vague. Now, on their events page on the CITF14.tv website, you can go to their events tickets page and there's nothing there. Apparently starting November the 5th, you will be able to go there and you will be able to block your tickets off if you wish. So
good luck to them.
Exactly.
It's a noble endeavor.
If they had an all night screening of The Hilarious House of Frightenstein, I would be there.
Dude.
You need to suggest that for next year.
Oh,
you could moderate a panel. Is anybody left?
But here's the thing. The brilliant thing is the old CHCH Studios where they shot that is now it's a theater. They use it kind of as a small community theater, but they also have a screen where they can show movies. that's where you need to do the marathon.
Right.
You need to do it in the theater where it was shot, or in the studio where it was shot, for sure. Anyway, go CITF14.tv if you're interested. And on November the 5th, you'll find what the heck's going on, because we don't know.
I do know I'm going to be going. No matter what happens, I'll be going to some of the stuff to check it out. So I'm looking forward to reporting back.
I will be interested in that.
I want to see what marathon's happening the Saturday afternoon I happen to be in Toronto, because I may be able to grab a nap.
The Trouble with Tracy.
Oh, there you go.
That actually, I bet they'd get some, like, just curious people hate watching shows.
It would be the total ironic marathon.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's not like...
People cosplaying as Tracy. Yeah.
Thinking, it used to be the big thing with like Attack of the Killer Tomatoes and that kind of thing. You'd go to the theater with tomatoes, and it's not like that was a good show. That was the whole point.
Yeah. That's the entire concept of Rocky Horror Picture Show, to be honest with
you. Yeah, that's the one I was trying to think of, and I, for some reason, couldn't think of the name.
So coming to us from Forbes.com this week, an interesting little article as our think piece of the week. You know what we haven't played in a while, Diane? We haven't played the think piece stinger.
Probably because we haven't really done a think piece for a while.
I think I'm going to play the think piece stinger right now. Think, 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 you think, 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 think about it. You better think. There it was.
I didn't hear it, Anthony.
Yeah.
It's broken.
I do it in post. Don't tell anyone.
Secrets revealed.
Exactly. Television is on the cusp of its first ever indie scene. I would dare say that the first ever indie scene happened with the invention of television. So maybe it's not the first ever indie scene. But perhaps it is a new indie scene. So this, like I said, Forbes.com, talking to us about the fact that with all of the different things out there now, especially with Netflix and Amazon and all these new services which have become content creators creeping in, it's going to provide an opportunity, and even YouTube. I mean, YouTube's become a content creation network for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has. I mean, Google put in a bunch of money into original channels on YouTube, and they, you know, there are definitely, you know, they. It seems like they're laying the groundwork to do a lot of original content there too, like as in YouTube kind of created original content.
The example,
or at least in partnership.
Yeah, the example they give in here is Video Game High School. It didn't air on TV. It was a fan-funded program released on YouTube. And even, I mean, web series, which we haven't talked about for a while on this podcast, but if you ever want to learn about web series, great podcast called The Limited Release Podcast. Mm-hmm. Candace and Nick do that every week. Go and listen to that. You can search it out. But they talk about web series every week, and a lot of them are Canadian as well. And if you want to see where there's a lot of Canadian content going on from an indie bent, it's web series these days.
Absolutely. And I think it's heartening, too, because, you know, the internet isn't regulated the way, you know, there aren't Canadian content requirements on YouTube or Netflix, for that matter. And so it's an interesting way to see how much Canadian content actually does rise to the top. It's heartening. I mean, it makes you think there are some young creators probably doing some interesting things, and they're getting an audience, and, you know, they're finding an audience, you know, in North America without any kind of protection. And I don't mean that at all as a, you know, comparison that so TV shouldn't need protection. I mean, it's a very different ecosystem, but I just think that's really interesting and really heartening that there is a lot of good stuff cropping up. I mean, I think it's still very difficult for people to make any money at it, but, you know,
well, there are more and more crowdfunding models that are available now.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And one of the cool things about that is the sustainability models as opposed to just the startup models. Especially if you're doing something like a web series, where if you got enough people who would jump in there, and you could say, hey, are you willing to chip in $1 or $2 every time we do an episode of this? That's a pretty interesting model if you can get enough people jumping on. Now, most of the people who make tons of money off of that model are people who have some kind of notoriety already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But it doesn't have to be somebody who is a superstar. It doesn't take much. I mean, you could have been like, you know, a minor star who had or a minor celebrity who had some following here, some following there, that's the place where you can gather this all up. I like this idea. I'm shocked. And I think we used to talk about this, you know, back to the beginnings of the podcast, Diane, this idea of why isn't a, with all of the tons and tons and hundreds of channels out there now, why isn't a channel or one of the silos paying some money to these people just for the broadcast rights to this stuff? It's new content. It's probably cheap as hell because they're not even expecting to get it on the air.
Well, it's happened. I mean, I was surprised the Writers Guild of Canada doesn't seem to be very interested in YouTube as a channel, because their president, Jill Golic, started her Ruby Sky PI web series online, and it got picked up by CBC. That's a huge deal. That happens very rarely, but it does happen. It tends to happen, I think, more often that, you know, like Amazon, this isn't happening in Canada, but Amazon is, you know, getting these pilots done, and then they get the audience to vote which ones they want to actually get made into series. And CBC here is doing the Comedy Coup contest, where people vote on the concept that they like best. Like, there's trailers that they, you know, can watch and vote on. And that is eventually going to make it to air, and they're basically going to be web series, I think.
Yes.
That make it to air at some point. So, you know, there's little bits of it going on. And I think I always get heartened when I see a, you know, network who sort of sees that the rest of the world is doing a certain thing that's probably going to come to Canada pretty soon too. Or, you know, let's try and get ahead of the curve maybe on some things. And I think there's little glimpses of it here and there, but I think there could absolutely be more, because if you need Canadian content and you don't have a lot of money to produce it, you know, why not get something like that that you can sort of smush on your channel at some point? Maybe it's a Friday night. That's where Canadian content tends to live anyway. So why not?
If I was starting up an independent channel at this point, and we've already talked about how I could never get a channel because there's no possible way, because I was shut out. But if I could get a channel these days and I was thinking, how am I going to fill it with content which is cheap but is somehow going to be attractive? If I wanted that key demographic of those millennials, I would go to web series creators and I would say, I will pay you this much to show it on television. And I bet you I could get tons of web series who, for a very little amount, for the amount that it would take to fund their next season, I could show their content over and over and over again. And that's not supposed to be a slap at the fact that, that web series creators are cheaper to buy off. They're just not expecting that it's going to go anywhere after the web necessarily.
It's kind of an aftermarket thing. Like, I mean, that would be very unfair if people were pitching their shows and you were saying, no, but you go make it and we'll air it.
Yeah.
But if it happens to be something that they made already, you're right. I mean, I think Jill was thrilled, obviously, to get Ruby Sky onto CBC, the network, you know, because she's been doing this. She's been doing really interesting things actually online for a while. What I hate the term transmedia. Thankfully, it seems to have kind of gone away in mainstream talking.
But keep bringing it back, Diane. Thanks.
I know. But she was doing really interesting things where it was, you know, she would have a YouTube, you know, web series, but it would also be tied to things she was doing on Facebook and Twitter and whatever else, Instagram. And, you know, it's good to see her getting a financial, I'm assuming CBC is giving her some financial benefit to this, but it's a bit disheartening that that's the way it works, I guess, that it's still the brass ring to get it to be a series on TV, that it's not enough. Like, there's no good system for creators to get a lot of money by doing it just online, unless, like you said, they already have a fan base. I mean, everyone was pointing to Joss Whedon and Rocky Horror Picture Show. That's not it. What was it called? Dr. Horrible.
Oh, Doctor. Sing-along.
Everyone was pointing to that as this huge success of, see, it can be done, that you can have an online success. But yeah, if you're Joss Whedon, it's not going to happen if I do that, you know?
Yeah,
right.
And that was also a case of where he was trying to sell the episodes too. Like, he wasn't he was trying to sell individual episodes, but yeah, there wasn't that idea. I'm serious. Any smart small station now would independent station, just go find the best web series out there. Fill up your station with web series. It's good content. I mean, there's some great web series out there that you can't tell are any different from a television series.
Well, some of them were made like almost as pilots, like,
yeah,
or presentations. Like, there have been a lot of examples of that in the States. And when YouTube sort of put the money into original channels, they started getting people like Ferrell and Madonna and, you know, a bunch of people starting their own channels. And then they paid people to have web series. And some of them were existing ones. There's some that, like, I'm not huge into web series, but the ones that I've seen could absolutely be a TV show, you know, lower production values. But that, I think, as long as the story's there, that doesn't necessarily bother people.
And you could easily do promotion in kind whereby, I mean, you're showing this thing on a television station. At the end of the episode, say, hey, if you want to fund our next season, go here.
Mm-hmm. And that happens all the time. Like, the ones that I've seen, they've gone to the crowdfunding model.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I think what tends to happen is they've gone to the crowdfunding model, got a certain amount, and then their producer has said, okay, we'll kick in the rest. But, you know, whatever works, that's fine.
So this begs the question, is television on the cusp of its first ever indie scene? Or is television not on the cusp of its first indie scene, but television is being left behind, but will be left to show whatever the new indie scene comes up with? In other words, is the indie scene the web like it has been for the past 10 years, and now television is just caught up with the fact that it might have to take some content from the web?
That's, I mean, I don't think that's what Forbes' argument is, but that, no. I can't really see indie as being, you know, Netflix and Amazon to me are not indie. You can't call a giant
right,
to me anyway. I mean, to me, indie is trying to tap into the creators who are already doing things, and some of them are really trying to get on TV, like that is what they want, and some of them are just not waiting for that and creating it themselves. And I think, yeah, to me, the indie scene is more these examples that are few and far between, but there's some of them where television is taking note and saying, you know, hey, we could use this either on our digital channels. Like, that's happened more often, where CBC, I think, was showing Ruby Sky API on their website before they decided to put it on the actual channel. Right. But, you know, it's still, I still think Canadian networks aren't, except for Rogers lately, they're just still not really thinking of, we need to own our own content in this world. Like, we can't really compete with a Netflix if we're all competing for the same stuff. We actually need to own our content. I don't think most networks in Canada are thinking that way.
No, they're playing catch up. I mean, you look at it, at this point, they're still making, the only extra content that they're making are kind of interstitials to go along with their already established shows. Like, they'll have a webisode, like, check out these different, these webisodes from Motive. Like, they keep doing these little spin-offs of their existing shows. The Listener had that. Murdoch Mysteries did that for one season as well. So they're not really, at this point, they're not creating anything new per se. They're just doing, you know, they're branching out to the internet, but with the safe franchise that they already have.
Yeah, and I mean, what bugs me about that too is there's a pot of money they can access to do that.
Yes.
There has to be some sort of digital component. And so they get this pot of money to do that. And to me, that's not really, it's probably not serving the show in terms of, this isn't really drawing more people to the show. And I don't think it's really serving their content needs, because I, like you said, it's just kind of tied to the existing content. It's not trying something new, taking a bit of a risk on something that might actually get a bunch of eyeballs, and maybe you would want to end up producing it for television. Like, to me, that would be exciting if they use this as part of their development slate, like Amazon is doing. You know, let us see them, and the ones that land really well, maybe that's what makes it to air. But, you know,
I would also love to think that if some of the great stuff that's happening on the web right now was pushing television, don't get me wrong, I think that there are several ideas on the web which are being usurped by television in not necessarily the best ways. But I don't think that necessarily the web is pushing television to be more creative or to be more dangerous.
No, I don't think so either.
Anyway, I don't know if television is having its first ever indie scene, but when I think of indie scene, I remember just flipping through a lot of records in small, dank record stores when I was a kid. That was what indie was to me.
Yeah.
Searching out that first 12-inch EP of Bela Lugosi's Dead by Bauhaus. I just dated myself horribly. I did. That's it for the links this week, folks. You are listening to the TVA podcast, episode 169. You can find us every week by, well, you can play the episodes on the website. You can go to tv-eh.com, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed. You can find the link to that on the webpage itself, and you can go and subscribe there. You can go to iTunes or wherever you want to. You subscribe to it, and then every week, every time we have new content, it will get pushed to you. And if you like most of what you're hearing, but you think, I know what they should talk about, then you go to our subreddit at tveh.reddit.com and give us some links to talk about. And every second week, we'll come here and we'll maybe talk about them. That's kind of what we do. And every other week, you will hear the interstitial podcast called the TV ABCs.
Interstitial, wow.
Called the TV ABCs podcast, where, you know, we'll sit down and talk with somebody who is someone from the Canadian television industry, whether they be from in front or behind the camera, and you hear a longer form discussion with them as well. So there you go. That's all of what we do. And then, of course, there's a lot to read, too. I can't keep up with the blog posts anymore.
That's Greg is a machine.
He is. There are way too many of them. Greg, why don't you tell people where they can Greg, why don't you tell people where they can find you? Well, we know where they can find you if they're going to be in Toronto in a couple of weeks.
Right. If you can't make it to Toronto, you can go to the Twitters. I'm there at Greg_David. And when I'm not doing my personal website, I'm over on the TVA website with the /GD. So you can blame me and not Diane if I post something that you don't like.
But usually it's me being mean.
I thought that was my job. Diane, where can people
find me? I'm not mean.
No, you're cynical. You challenge people.
I'm jaded, yes.
And she can be mean.
But they've done it to me. I was like shiny, happy person when I first started the site.
She can be mean. She can really be mean, trust me.
Only to you.
Yeah. Where can they find you, Diane?
I help run the TVA website, which is tv-eh.com. I'm on Twitter at DeeKaYW. And where can you be found, Anthony?
You can find all the other podcasts I do at anthonymarco.com. You can find me on Twitter at anthonymarco. And yeah, that's about it. That's where you can find all of my stuff. And did we mention TV_EH on Twitter? I think we did at the beginning.
I think we did.
That's about it for this week, folks. We'll be talking to you in another couple of weeks. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.